Hi, it's Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. The title of this interview is called How I Built a $60 Million Business with My Bipolar Disorder. During a manic episode, Steve Miller said he decided to start his own business, and because of his bipolar disorder, he didn't worry about a thing. He didn't worry about quitting his job, how he would get clients, how he would pay his bills, none of that. None of the concerns that would normally have stopped someone from such a bold move concerned Steve, and he made money, and a lot of it. But like most disorders, bipolar has gifts, and it also has difficulties. Steve's lows included everything from contemplating suicide to a scary psychotic episode where he thought he could communicate with Abraham Lincoln. If this sounds like you or someone you love, this audio is perfect for you. It will show you that it is possible to manage bipolar disorder without it taking away the amazing gifts it can give. Learn straight from someone who has lived it, Steve Miller, author of A Bipolar Life. You also learn in this interview the only therapy combination that really works, but why it's so important to tailor it to your own needs. You'll hear about the fastest known ways to get out of a depression funk. Come to find out, the small stuff really does help. You'll learn all about a little known free AA for people with bipolar disorders that Steve says saved his life. You'll hear exactly what Steve thinks triggered his psychotic episode and how to avoid a moment like that with tips for managing stress. You'll hear about the one book everyone suffering from bipolar disorder should read. You'll hear why Steve says action comes before motive and how to use that in everyday life to keep yourself going at even the toughest times. You'll hear about three famous people you may not ever have known suffered from depression or bipolar disorder. Steve says it's important to know yourself and your triggers when it comes to this disorder. Exercise frequently and don't forget to give yourself credit for even the little things you do, especially during the bleak, dark times when it feels like there's no way out. Those are the times when you just have to get yourself to take the next small step. And in this audio interview, you'll hear what these steps are and how to manage all of them. Now let's get going.
Hi, this is Chris Costello, and I've teamed up with Michael Senoff to bring you the world's best health-related interviews. So if you know anyone struggling with their weight, with cancer, diabetes, ADHD, autism, heart disease, or other health issues, send them over to Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Today we are talking with author Steve Millard, author of A Bipolar Life, 50 years of battling manic depressive illness did not stop me from building a $60 million business. Steve, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, I thank you, Chris, and I thank you for the opportunity to be on your show.
Well, it's just a pleasure to have you with us today. So I want to start way back. You started out in the Air Force, right, with your career?
I did. I graduated from the University of Vermont and then went right in the Air Force. And I was in the Air Force 3 years, and then I took a job as an instructor to the Hawaii Air National Guard. So I was actually 4 years in the service.
In Bipolar Life, you've got a lot of interesting descriptions, a lot of very high-stress situations you were in. A lot of times it sounds like you really saved people's lives by bringing them down with airplanes that weren't working and things like that.
I had a number of cases that way, but what put me down, my illness broke out my last year with a broken engagement, which you would not think would do that, but my illness broke out with that broken engagement and wound up going to the hospital in Honolulu for a week or so and then returning to my job in the island of Kauai as an instructor. But that was the first episode. I was 27 years old.
So you were 27 when you first felt these symptoms. And so did you ever, before that point, have any inkling that there was something not quite right?
Good question. I've been asked that before, and the answer is none. I never had a situation that set me back like this engagement in Hawaii. And the age 27, oddly enough, is about the average where the illness breaks out. Lots of young people who get it, but the average age is 27. And prior to that, I wouldn't have had the slightest inkling. And I was in denial the whole time because as an Air Force officer, I couldn't accept the fact that I had a mental problem. I was supported by the Air National Guard I was working for. They were really quite good about it. But I don't know now in the military. I guess they are more accommodating. One of the people that is bipolar was Aldrin. He went up in one of the space capsules, and he was bipolar. So perhaps there is more of an understanding of the illness.
So what were the symptoms when you first, at 27, you said you had your first bipolar episode? What happened to you?
Fear. I woke up frightened to death. It wasn't depression, it was fear and anxiety. They put me in the local hospital, and that calmed me down, and I calmed down when I went to Honolulu, but the initial one was unbelievable fear. I guess you have to just call it extreme anxiety.
Was it just like kind of a generalized fearfulness, or was it certain things?
No, everything. I just woke up with it, and I couldn't shake it.
Wow.
So it was very frightening, having never experienced that before.
And Steve, you know, one of the most interesting things about your story in the book Bipolar Life is that you spent the next, was it 30 years, building a phenomenal career. I mean, working for Reader's Digest, L.L. Bean, Land's End, just terrific business success. But you did this without people knowing, for the most part, about your illness.
That's correct. And interestingly, I've talked to my psychiatrist about people who are bipolar, and half of the patients that he's taken care of live a very guarded life, afraid of the next episode. But I was in the other half, and as soon as I would feel well, I would progress. I would do what I planned to do. I always wanted my own business. I worked for Brookstone, had no episodes during that period. A lot of it depended on what I was doing. And if I was happy and busy, I didn't have any episodes. So then I would crash in some sort of a depression. And when I came out of it, I'd go right back at what I was doing. I would almost forget that I was ill.
What we've seen with the people we've interviewed, a lot of these conditions, there's great difficulty involved, but there are also great gifts. And obviously you had that in your ability to build a $60 million business, the Millard Group, and all of the companies that you've been involved with. But I want to go back a little more and just talk about, for people that don't know, that may be searching, what are the symptoms? What are some of the things that people will see if they are dealing with a bipolar illness?
Well, as I said, with me, it started out with high anxiety. The first 10 or 15 years, my primary symptom was fear, sweaty palms, just intense anxiety. As I got older, it switched to depression, and that's where it has been for the last 15, 20 years. I'll slip into a depression, and my journals show that I have had 18 years of deep depression. Now, that isn't at one time. That's 6 months here, 12 months there, 18 months. But add it all up, and it comes to 18 years. I like those years back, but they're not going to happen now.
Yeah.
Having said that, 30 years of productivity. So I'm ahead of the game.
So with the bipolar, it's that feeling of highs, extreme, being able to accomplish anything, mixed in with, it sounds like, a dose of pretty serious depression, unable to do things, tiredness, things like that, right?
Well, any high you have, any manic episode or hypomanic episode, guaranteed will be followed by a depression. I mean, it's just like night and day. If you're high, you're going to experience a depression at some point. That's upsetting. But people, I want to tell your listeners, even though they may not be diagnosed as bipolar, but as suffering depression, the techniques that I've outlined in my book are for anybody who's depressed. You don't have to be bipolar to be depressed.
And the numbers are huge. I mean, obviously, you look at the television advertising for antidepressants, and there's a lot of people out there with depression.
And that almost is a problem, too. Probably the best treatment I know is cognitive therapy and medication. But there's so many types of medication, it might take quite a while to find the one that matches your chemistry. It's a matter of your chemistry and that chemistry. And there's so much of that out there, and I've had to experiment with, a dozen or so before I found one that worked. So don't be discouraged.
So, Steve, how important do you think running is in getting over things like depression, running, exercise, things like that?
The running and the exercise, that's perfect. My book, I think I've got about three chapters on simple techniques, and I mean simple, that when you read them, you'll say, ah, that can't work. And something like cleaning the garage or cleaning out that mess underneath your kitchen sink or cleaning the cellar or just simple things, when you finish them, you can endorse yourself. You can say, look what I did. I didn't think I could do anything.
Right.
As opposed to doing nothing and hating yourself at the end of the day.
And just small steps starts out with getting out of bed and making a few steps and then taking a few more steps. And you've got to give yourself that time.
You hit it right on the head. Just getting out of bed, just
right.
Getting dressed, just taking a shower. Those things can be overwhelming. And what I've recommended is make a list of obnoxious jobs in your house and take the easiest one first. Don't take on a tough one. Take the easiest one and just keep an ongoing list of things you can do to endorse yourself. And you did the right thing with the running, no question.
One of the things that's remarkable about your story is you had this decades-long career, and you pretty much self-diagnosed and self-recovered on your own quite a bit, it sounds like. So what did you do that worked for you?
You mean getting out of depressions?
Yeah, all those years you really were kind of handling it yourself.
But I had a lot of good years, Chris, where I wasn't depressed and where I wasn't anxious. And the good years I took advantage of. I always wanted my own business. And at the time I was working for the Brookstone Company and had made a reputation in the industry. I gave a lot of speeches and panels and whatnot. So I had acquired a number of potential clients. And I was anxious for a year when I decided to go, but I consider that normal anxiety. You know, it's very difficult to decide to leave a great job and go off on your own. So that anxiety was not severe, and I considered that normal. And when I did go off on my own, here's where my illness helped me. I announced to my boss that I was leaving January 1st, I think. And right after I talked to him, I went up, and not manic, but hypomanic. No concern about how much money it would take, no concern about whether I was going to get clients. All the things that would normally concern somebody starting out did not concern me. So I was hypomanic for about 10 months, and the business succeeded. And suddenly my gal, there were just two of us, and she said, I think we have enough money coming in next month to pay the bills. And at that point, I should have been even higher, but instead, I crashed. And that, again, I told you, any high is you're going to expect a low. I was depressed for about 6 months. You know, I had to work, so I kept doing it.
For more interviews on health, mind, body, and spirit, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. You guys were doing great, right?
Oh, yeah. She said that money was coming in. It looked like we could pay the bills next month. To that point, I've been using savings. That should have put me even higher, but instead, I didn't need the illness anymore. I needed that hypomania. I need that kind of drive. I'd get 4 hours sleep a night, calling on clients 7 days a week. And when I didn't need the illness anymore, I crashed, and I was depressed for about 6 months, badly depressed. I kept working. So that's what I said to you before. Any high, you got to expect a low.
There were some other things that you did. Specifically, you mentioned Dr. Lowe that was very helpful.
There's a broken romance, and I slid into a psychotic state. Thank God it's only happened to me once. But I believed I was the redeemer. And that's not an uncommon hallucination, by the way. But in any case, I believe it. And Abraham Lincoln was my hero, and I believed he was going to call on me, and we would have a conversation. And I was legitimately crazy. That lasted about 4 or 5 months, and a friend from Rockland County came over and rescued me and got me over to the other side of the river. And I lost my job. I had nothing, Chris. I lost my job. I lost all my money. I was at zero. Substitute teaching for $40 a day. And then I heard about recovery, which is what you just asked about. It was called recovery. Now it's Abraham Lowe Self-Help System. And they're in Chicago. Anyway, I heard about them and I joined that group. They really saved my life. I mean, I was surrounded by people who had the same problems, some worse than mine. I couldn't imagine being worse than mine, but they were. It's similar to AA. It doesn't cost any money. They have 400 units around the country. They meet in church halls and that sort of thing. So there's no money involved. But Dr. Lowe is recognized as the first doctor who practiced cognitive therapy. And he did that because he found his patients were cured and they wind up coming back. So he came up with this cognitive therapy. His books all talk. My book gives him a couple of pages of some of the sayings and techniques he wants you to use. So anyway, it's a wonderful organization, and a lot of people don't know about it.
So what are some of those techniques that the Lowe group recommends?
You may be helpless, but you're not hopeless. Move your muscles. That's what you and I were both talking about. You know, do something. That's two that come to mind. There are lots of others. They're in the book.
And so when you had that episode that was so disturbing, you were basically marketing director at Reader's Digest, right?
No, I was assistant sales manager for books. And when I had that psychotic break, they couldn't keep me. They wanted me to go into a hospital, and I wouldn't do it, so I lost my job. So I really started at zero and worked my way back.
One of the things that struck me in the book was that even though you were going through the low point for yourself there, the people around you were very, in a way, supportive.
They were. I had a good friend over in Rockland County who brought me over, helped me find a little house. I lived at his house for a while. He had a real estate company. I sold real estate, but it was a bad market.
Yeah, I loved that story where you said you were too honest probably to sell real estate and you direct people
right
to the competitor's house.
He's a good friend of mine. He's one of my fishing and hunting companions.
Obviously, you've had a tremendously successful career and you've helped other people make millions. I don't know, maybe more than millions of dollars. What are the things that helped you do that?
Well, the bipolar helped?
Yeah.
Is that what you're asking?
I am.
I gave you that example of when I started my business, instead of being fearful, which would be the normal reaction, I totally lacked any fear. I didn't worry about money, and I didn't have that much capital in the business. I only had, I think, $50,000. So there's a case where I was hypomanic. There's no question about that. And that really helped me build the business. I credit my illness to my success. Once it got going, it just kept going. I wound up with 220 employees and a pretty big company.
And did very well with it. But you never had another break as badly as the one that you had at Reader's Digest.
Thank God, no. A lot of bipolar people do not have psychotic breaks. I mean, I was under a hell of a strain. That was the problem. But that's not common.
I was going to say, are there things you can pinpoint that led up to it that maybe others that are listening can try to avoid so that they don't have to go through that?
Well, I can remember very clearly. I wanted to marry this young girl. She was young. She didn't want me working at the Reader's Digest. She didn't like the fact I was Catholic. So I was trying to do all these things. I mean, it's too much. The church, the company, and then she left. And so emotionally, it was far too much for anybody.
So handling stress can really be helpful. And we hear that a lot, just trying to find those things like meditation and exercise and knowing yourself, really, you know, knowing how far you can push it.
I'll give you another example that you talked about your running. Christmas gets me down. And I was in a very depressed state day before Christmas, and I knew I had to do something to get out of it because I was going to spend the day with my close friends. And, you know, the last thing they needed was a depressed guy. So I said, I'll decorate the house. This was not too many years ago. I went downtown to the Agway store, and I got wreaths and tinsel and swags and lights, and I worked all day, and the house looked like a cheap Walmart, but I was completely out of the depression just because I had done something. I actually had done a lot.
It's back to that movement thing. It's back to that do something, no matter what it is. I loved your description of your wood sculpting career also. That was pretty good.
I forgot about that. I took up in inlay work, woodworking, and that was a tremendous help to me. You can only focus on one thing at a time, and if your focusing is really focused on woodworking, you're not thinking about the depression.
The other thing you very candidly and openly talk about in bipolar life, you did get to the point where you actually were contemplating taking your own life.
That was after that psychotic episode. I went into, I'll never forget it, it was the deepest depression I've ever been in. And when I came out of it, I realized that I had lost my job. I didn't have any money. And I was so depressed, I tried to kill myself. But I stopped. I remember saying, I'm too tough for this. I took the gun the next day and had the barrel welded so it couldn't fire. I never tried it again. I look at the gun, I still have it. As bad as I would get, I would never do that again.
Just hopefully for anybody listening, you know, they can get the sense of hope from this interview that when you are in those dark, very, very bleak times, you can get through it, you know. And when you get through it, it's amazing. You know, you can't even remember it.
I would come out of a depression and it was normal level. I just started thinking about the next thing I was going to do.
So, Steve, what else can we tell people? Is there anything else that you'd like to share with them today about your story?
Well, I guess if people are struggling or not sure what to do, I would urge them to get into some cognitive therapy with medication, okay? And I didn't do that for 25 years because I couldn't afford it. That's only about half the answer. The other half of the answer is you have to do things on your own. And the therapist, if he's a good cognitive therapist, he will urge you to do certain things on your own. And like I said, I've got two or three chapters in my book on what I did do myself, because you only see a therapist once or twice a week. And medication, you may not hit the right one first. Then you got to do things on your own. I mean, you can't live with a therapist. So you're going to have to do things on your own, and there are tips in there. And you've already outlined one with the running, which is perfect. I mean, the silliest things, reading or running or exercise or cleaning a closet, just little things, and make a list of things you want to get done. And then at the end of them, no matter how small they are, endorse yourself. Endorse yourself. Say, look what I did today. So that would probably be the most important thing I'd like to pass on to your listeners, Chris.
And then, you know, that's one of the things that I don't think we've talked enough about, Steve, is, you know, it is so important to find the right therapist or the right doctor, and sometimes it takes a long time.
Good point. I have that point in my book. If you find that you find a therapist and you just don't have the right chemistry, don't stay. Find another one. You'll waste a lot of time. You've got to find the right chemistry with a doctor. So the first one you try isn't right, move on.
And then the reading, I stumbled across Mike Wallace's biography, which is astounding to see someone of that caliber.
He was a depressive, very bad one.
Remarkable what he accomplished. Same with William Styron.
He was even worse. I mean, I don't mean worse, but he had more severe attacks, I think, than Wallace did.
But beautifully described in his book, and there's great comfort in knowing other people that have accomplished great things have gone through this kind of thing.
I'm fortunate to have had the right therapist. He lived in New Hampshire, where I live, but he moved to Portland, Maine. So I go up and see him once in a while, but mostly we talk on the phone. I'll say, call me at the end of the day, and he'll call me at 4:30, and I got a problem, or I'm down, or, you know, the medication's not working. And we talk on the phone. That's just as effective, I find, as having a visit. Oh, listen, let me mention one other book that I refer to in my book. The one book that I want you to get the most is the one by Abraham Lowe, Self-Help System. It's called Mental Health Through Will Training. Mental Health Through Will Training. And the other one I refer to, not as often, but he's excellent, is Dr. David Burns, B-U-R-N-S. His title of his book is Feeling Good, and it's about depression, just depression, not bipolar. And there are 4 million of his books in print, so you can be assured he's well accepted. And he has some interesting things to say, like he said, what comes first, motivation or an action? And you would agree that it's motivation and action. And he said, no, it's action and then motivation. which is the perfect thing you and I have been talking about. Action comes first. Then you'll have the motivation.
And that first action for anybody that's battling any of these kind of issues is get some help. Don't try to do this on your own because it's a big project.
It is. Anyway, I hope I've been some help to your listeners.
Oh, I'm sure you have. And Steve, we want to thank you so much for bringing bipolar life out into the public eye. And we just wish you the greatest success with it. And thank you again for joining us.
Okay, Chris. Thank you so much for letting me be on the show. I really enjoyed it.
That's the end of our interview. I hope you found it helpful. For more great interviews on health, wellness, making money in advertising and marketing, go to Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.